Welcome back to the Trekway. Sorry for any delays, technical difficulties. Trying to make the stream all nice and shiny. And I've already got one technically. There we go. Something appeared on the screen that made it look awful. We're doing a little live review and discussion just to break it up from the short reviews that I'm doing myself, because I know everyone's different grade. People were just discussing this before. Some people like short reviews, some people like long reviews. So why don't we give the people what they want and do both? So we can do what we want for the next hour or so.
By the way, you're broadcasting on YouTube, right?
Yeah, we're on the YouTubes. We'll be on TikTok live soon as well. And I'm thinking of doing the StreamYard, you know, where you can broadcast to many different sources at the same time. Thinking of doing that as well. So just to break it up and make it a bit different, you know. And you'll be able to see, Gray, what I've done with the background. It's just blend us in a little bit more. But yeah, so thank you very much for patience, and thank you for Gray's patience while I was setting things up. We're going to just basically have a live review and discussion of what happened here. It'll be longer than the 10-15 minute reviews I normally do, and it means for the people that like longer reviews, heads up, I like both. I don't know about you, Gray. I like short and longer reviews depending on what mood I'm in. So we'll literally just be, and these, there you go. I don't pay him for that or nothing. He does that for free. It's great. But I don't have the mug. That's the thing. The mug's in the wash, so it's just going to have to be
That's a good mug. That's a good mug, though.
What about the cup? Oh, you're not talking about that.
Okay, well. The mug. Oh, that mug, yeah. That's true. That means we have four mugs, us two and the other two.
Very true. So, yeah, little live review. I will take our time and just have a casual chat about it. Gray, when I watched this episode, without spoiling the scores, I thought it was a bit meh. You did as well, but without spoiling it yet, your score was slightly higher than mine. Is meh
it's
a fair assumption?
It's slightly better meh.
Slightly better meh. Well, that's fair. That's fair, to be honest with
you. Or we'll call it meh plus.
Meh plus. Oh, man alive. Well, listen, okay, for all the meh-ness, it did start with a very, very nice intro. Very nice start to that show of, I call it Starship Porn. When we got to see all the nice starships up and close. And I forget the name of that main one. The first one we saw looked like a mini Star Destroyer.
Yeah, it looked like a wide battleship or a wide aircraft carrier or something. It was like wide, man.
What was that? It was like you've copied from
no
Star
idea.
Wars.
I have to go back and take a look at that. But I mean, the whole thing of course, we couldn't see everything, but it looked like just one big wide ship. I mean, really wide.
And I never caught the name of it, but I tried to. It had like the same letters twice at the end of the word, so I was like, what is the name of this ship? It's weird. Then we saw the one in the background, the one that Tilly calls it, a forest on a ship or something like that. It looked like and maybe it's the USS David Attenborough, maybe. I don't know. And another thing, did you notice? So I only noticed this recently. So there's now programmable matter, Gray. So the nacelles can be like separate apart. Now, that's equally cool and equally annoying, because I don't see how that's even theoretically possible. And we're supposed to be on, for the most part, physics that's theoretically possible, or science, should I say. So I don't know if I love it or I hate it. Do you buy the whole programmable matter thing? It can do anything. It's a holy grail.
I think it's interesting, but the problem with being 1,000 years in the future is you can kind of say, well, everything can be done now. I mean, you were saying that there's no such thing as programmable matter, but who knows? 1,000 years from now, yeah, everything could be programmable matter. I mean, look, they're doing gene splicing and other things now where they're telling genes what to do and where to go. So if you extrapolate that out in 1,000 years from now, yeah, it's possible. But the problem with, I think, that I don't like about going that far in the future, especially with Star Trek, is that you can just make that whole thing become a crutch. And I think that's part of the problem with not that it isn't cool to go that far in the future, but it gives the writers a constant crutch to lean back on and not have to write as well. And that's what's been going on with Discovery. They can just sit there and go like, well, we're 1,000 years in the future. We can get away with anything. Like, okay. And they do.
That's very true, Gray. It looks cool them being in the future like that, but the problem is, like you say, they have to come up with something so out there that it's kind of almost too out there.
Yeah.
And so, but they put themselves into that position. They did, by making an arse of it. They could have stayed back in the pre-TOS days, or run about the TOS days, if they hadn't made such an arse of it. But no, they made an arse of it, so then they had to bring in the Enterprise to save the day again, as the Enterprise does, and then travel to the future. So it's their own fault.
If we were supposedly trying to stay with physics, then I agree with your point. I mean, okay, so maybe it looks cool that things looked attached, but then if an enemy wants to hit you, it's a lot easier to hit pieces that are detached, because you can just knock the piece off much easier than trying to break it off a pylon. You know what I mean? So they could just sit there and knock a couple of these pieces off because they're basically floating there and damage the ship much easier.
You think it's easier with programmable matter to hit these pieces off?
Yeah. Or not easier? Because they're floating. They're basically floating. So if you disturb the field or whatever is keeping them, obviously there's some kind of a field there that's holding them together.
Space magnets.
So to me, it's like knocking something out of its field is easier than sitting there trying to knock a whole freaking pylon down with these things connected.
I never thought.
So I would just go like, sure, do that. Boom. Just sit there and knock those pieces off again. You're done. There goes warp.
That makes sense. It does. It does make sense. Yeah. I never thought of it like that. But that.
It's because we're better writers than the writers. But that's another story.
That many Star Destroyers, I'm calling it, that looks similar, it's certainly in terms of the pylons to, or not pylons, the cells to the other ship in episode one, the Antares. What I mean by that is, if you look carefully, Gray, so you've got the nacelles separated from the hull, right? But then there's another section on top of the nacelles that's floating above the nacelles. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Yeah, it almost looks like it's tiers or something.
Tiers. So there's like two floating
piece,
sections.
This floating piece, this floating piece. Yeah.
That's batshit
it's
crazy.
A little much. Yeah.
So technically, that should be better at warp. I don't know. That's my technical expertise in that. But anyway.
Can you imagine if the whole ship were to morph into like a something different? All the people inside would get crushed.
That's Book's, like, oops. That's Booker's ship that does that, remember? And that's gone now.
Yeah.
The
morphing
ship.
See it in a smaller ship. That makes more sense because you don't have a lot of crew. So they can't get hurt, right? Everything has to morph around the control room only. Even though it does seem a bit... for purposes of science fiction, you can't have something that crazy that can happen because it just kills the immersion, I think.
Or you just call it Doctor Who and get on with it.
Okay.
Sure, you do, yeah. It gets batshit crazy. It doesn't make sense, but anyway. So that whole... 5-10 seconds at the very start of the Starship porn is beautiful, but that probably costs them a couple of $100,000 probably in fees, so no doubt it's very expensive stuff, CGI.
Yeah.
The space porn out the way, or Starship porn out the way, should I say, they have to try and find some person on Trill that could very well be 800 years old, because this person was about at the same time as this Romulan ship was around. You see pictures of this Romulan scientist and a bunch of people in the background, and one of them is Janelle. That's the name. I know I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly. I'm thinking of the perfume when I say that every bloody time. Chanel. Chanel? It's Chanel number five, isn't
Chanel,
it?
Chanel. Yeah, Chanel. It looks like Chanel, but it's Chanel.
Chanel. That was the troll's name. But it's probably the person that was around at the time is probably long dead. But as we know, these little symbiotes that kind of swim about in the pools on Trill, they voluntarily choose their host. Unlike Stargate, where they just take them over, have big, nasty, glowy eyes. And no, the Trill and the people of the planet, they have a symbiotic thing together with them. And there's a way to maybe still get this person's memory. So they go to Trill, and it's your favorite type of alert gray. It's the black alert. And they're there just like that. So I'm kind of glad the Spore Drive is going to die at the end of the season, because it was too easy. I miss Warp. No, exactly. I miss Warp. I miss the slow lane. I can't believe it's like the slow lane. You want to take the slow lane gray so you can actually see the countryside go past and the views. And now you're...
It's like going to a race. You want to see the race, but it's just like they're at the start line, then they're at the finish line. That's it. No, nothing in between. It's like, you know,
They had to write it out. They had to write the Spore Drive out. They really did. That makes sense.
Spore Drive being 1,000 years in the future.
So what are they going to do all those mushrooms that they use to transport from go from A to B? They're just going to smoke them all then in a big bong or something?
I don't know. Or make some really good tea out of it. And then they'll think they're traveling, but they really aren't.
Yeah.
Can you imagine sitting there going like, wow, man, space really looks good today. And they're not even moving.
That'll be the pathway drive, whatever the hell that is. I'm very vague in that, as always.
Yeah, there you go. Pathway drive.
Hopefully find out what that is at the end of the season, but you know we won't, because we don't get nice things. So they go to Trill to try and... but they're not... Because we find out in a moment, they won't be immediately able to beam down. Raynor's back. Commander Raynor's back, Gray. We love Raynor. We're a big fan of Raynor. He's got a mission, a deadly serious mission that Burnham's going to give him before she goes down to Trill, and that's actually to meet his crew. He's not up for that. He's not
up
for
thrilled with that.
No.
He's like rolling his eyes and going, I have better things to do.
So I don't want to be friends with these people. I just want to command them and make them my little bitch. But no, he's
obviously
not...
has a few things to learn, right? So
we find that basically his people skills suck, don't they? They really do.
Much.
How did he make captain being so sucky? That doesn't make any sense.
From the comments that he made, apparently he ran the ship the way he acts, kind of. And everybody accepted that. But now that he's on Discovery, okay, they're all fun, love, and hippies. So they don't want to do that.
Harsh. Fun, love, and hippies. I saw the mushrooms, man. That's the only reason for that. I'd imagine his ship or the Antares was, if we ever found out what happened to that, maybe it's still in the sand. Who knows? Maybe he just runs out like a boot camp. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah.
He's not a people person, and he is not too pleased with having to meet all the crew, but Burnham basically says, you have to. It's your first command. I'm ordering you. You have to meet them and properly, and he's like, oh right, fine, okay. And there's a little one-to-one as we're getting to Trill between Stamets and Jet Reno's back. Yay.
I thought she disappeared for good or something. We haven't seen her lately.
Well, the last time I saw her was one of the last few episodes of the last season, and that's when she was a prisoner on Booker's ship. Remember that? She was stuck in there. She was trying to get out.
Yep.
I'm glad she's back, but she's a recurring character. And by the way, a little side note, I can't remember the actress's name, but she has had, around a bit of COVID time, some amount of awful bad luck, mate. I won't go into the details of what's happened to her, but, you know, cancer is one of the things that's happened to her. I feel so sorry for the woman. And to still come back with a smile on her face and still be working respect. She's a very comical character. She does stand-up comedy in real life, so it bleeds through to her performance. Very dry sense of humor. Like, very dry sense of humor, which I love. I love that kind of sense of humor. She's basically calling Stamets a space dad. Listen up, space dad.
Yeah.
It's up there with Dadmiral. This is
and he's like denying it, like, I'm not a dad. Yes, you are.
But it's a typical guy. It's like, we don't think of these things. It's always the woman that go, listen, you should really think about that. Ah, right, okay, thank you. There's usually two plots in an episode, Grey. There's a plot A and there's a plot B. Sometimes you'll get like a little mini plot C. This is the plot C part, which I found really dull, and that was, and no disrespect, it's just not my cup of tea, the relationship between Grey and Adira. Grey's still in the ship, not here. He's that's Grey's dad, Grey, yeah, mini Grey, large Grey. He is still in the ship, and his partner, Adira, is on Trill. Remember, the last season went back to Trill mm-hmm. because the person is Trill, and they meet up and all that, and all's nice in the world. And he doesn't see that there's a problem between these two, Space Dad Stamets, because they haven't seen each other, these two, this couple, for 6 months. And Jet thinks it's maybe game over, but he's like, nah, it'll be fine. And he takes a pause, a little moment, and he goes, oh, okay, damn. He is kind of like a dad to Grey, to be fair. So, never thought any other character would ever have the same name as you, Grey. That is just weird.
Well, Jet Reno is funny because when she started pointing out to him that you have to start realizing some of this stuff when you're a space dad. She's going like 6 months, and she keeps on repeating that to him, 6 months. And he's like, okay.
But what did she say at the end? She said something about...
I don't remember exactly, but she was obviously insinuating that they hadn't had relationships, we'll put it easily, in 6 months. And she kept on going, 6 months? Been a long time, 6 months.
Like, but then she gave herself into trouble then. She's like, it's probably nothing. What am I saying? Just to freak him out even more. Yeah, so that was the plot C part. Were you interested in that element of the story?
No, not really.
A plot A.
It would have been nice if they devoted too much time to it. It was getting boring. They should have just mentioned it a little bit and then had them, you know, meet up obviously on Trill and stuff, which is cool. And that's it. They didn't really need to go any further, but they had to go up and drag it out.
You know why they done that? Yeah. Because they spent all the rest of their CGI, they blew it in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, at the beginning.
That's why.
They had to come up with stuff to fill in. Like,
yeah.
They can't have a space. Pretty soon, the space effects are going to be the plastic models that people hold in their hand.
No, we're not going back to the olden days, Grey. No, with the guy. No,
even older than that, just you actually see a hand.
The guy's been drinking the night before. That's why it's all shaky and the glove isn't on properly.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. Let's never go back to those days. So, listen, anyway, the crew cannot beam down to Trill when they arrive. They're denied. Trill says no. Because they have to answer a riddle. And that, I can't remember his name, the head Trill. Hologram beams himself up. I don't know if that's a term, but the holograms are back and it appears on their bridge. And he has a riddle. I can't remember what the riddle was because I just thought it was ridiculous, but I'm awful. Listen, you got it? Did you get it?
No, I didn't get it, but I like the plot of having the riddles because it's supposed to be something
so dum-dums can't get
weird,
it.
Weird and difficult because they're trying to protect technology that can essentially destroy everything if it's in the wrong hand. So I kind of like the riddle idea. I'm not going to say the actual riddle was that great, but you know, but the idea of it was cool. That's fine.
Okay. So dum-dums can't basically come in and just grab the clue that they need. Burnham gets it pretty quickly. I'm surprised. Like she is an intelligent character. Like, you don't make captain unless you're a dum-dum usually. So she's pretty smart. She gets it.
I'm glad she got it because it would have been really bad if they had Tilly get it.
Okay, I know it's been written that she's supposed to get it, but you imagine if she didn't know the answer. She'd be like, how long have I got? Can I phone a friend? 50-50?
Yeah, 50-50. Can I bring Tilly in on this one?
We'll get to Tilly. Tilly is smart in some ways, by the way. She's super intelligent in some ways. She really is.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, so she answers the riddle. She tries to get more information from the head of the Trill, but the Trill only, this guy only can give the basic permissions to let her beam down and then meet the person in question, because he's not been told any more than that. So beam down to try and get the rest of the information, and Culber joins them. So it's Gray, Culber, and Burnham and Book that all go down this time. And they find out the only way they can get this, this is a bit space weirdness, is to share the consciousness of Janelle is in this old lady. And she's not got long in this planet, let's put it this way. And she's all tired with these memories. She says that she has to share these memories with a willing host. So no, again, no Stargate, no Snake in there. It's all... I thought actually we'd have to have a symbiote in him actually for a moment, Gray. I'll be honest with you. I thought that's how it was going to go.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about that.
You know?
I think I don't know if that's ever been done before.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because they went back on something that was probably done in Next Generation or whatever.
Deep Space Nine, maybe. Well,
maybe Deep Space Nine, I forget. But I did remember something about it. And apparently, like you were saying, that the trill memory can only live in another person for a few hours and that's it.
Yeah, that was it. Exactly, that was it. I don't know if it goes back at the end or it just expires. I can't remember.
It goes back at the end.
Goes back at the end. Right. So I thought... It can only last in that body for a little while, and then it goes back. It doesn't evaporate. So yeah.
Did you? By the way, I want to ask you your opinion. Mm-hmm. When the older lady that had eight previous lifetimes, right, including the one that they needed, which was the first one, I got the idea that the way she was talking was almost as if eight might be the limit or something for the symbiote, because she was talking about dying or going away, but she didn't say anything about the symbiote going forward. I would have thought she would have said something like, you know, I'm done with this and my symbiote needs to go into another body. Never said a word. They just said they were saying like eight is enough and eight is a long time. And so now I started getting the idea, wow, so symbiote does have a kind of a limit.
Yeah, well, it makes sense if you think about it. A symbiote couldn't go on indefinitely collecting memories constantly. There's every being that does exist in the universe has a finite hard drive in their noggin. There's only so much you could last a long time, but there's only so much you can retain. So yeah,
I actually like that idea. So that means a trill could go whatever 600 to 800 years max, you know, if they have eight, and then I guess the symbiote croaks finally or whatever. At least that's what I think.
I don't know what happens.
Makes sense.
I don't know what happens at the end. I'd be curious to find out. You know, does the memories then go into that pool thing that it's in, and it's like the Great Link and it's shaped with all the other little snakies, you know?
Maybe they just, you know, feed the symbiote to some bigger creature or something.
I should be calling them snakes. It's a bit harsh calling them snakes, because it's a thing that they both agree to willingly, actually. And there's a lot of benefits as well for the host, to be fair. Is it the people that are the trill or the symbiotes? I can never remember. Or they're both. Maybe they're both trill. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think it is. It's just that the symbiote is trill and then they have to have a host. Oh, you know what? Wait a minute.
I think they're both trill, man.
I think the trills were the original symbiotes, the symbiotes were the original trills. And then they had to... I believe in their evolution, they needed to create bodies that they could continue to live in. So that's where it came the relationship.
We don't really see much of Trill actually throughout the history of Star Trek, so it's actually kind of interesting.
No,
but we all know Jugsia Dax was the hottest Trill that ever lived. So just saying, and that's the coolest as well. She could hold her own against Worf. The Culber voluntarily takes these memories. And I thought, I'll be honest with you, Gray, I thought as soon as Culber got the memories of Janelle, like woke up and the actor played the part really well. I mention that here. I liked his performance, because this is an actor that's getting to actually, you know, stretch that acting muscle a little bit and actually play something a bit different. And Janelle was a bit cockier, a bit more of a lad. I kind of liked that. And he was grateful, because the first thing he said was, what year is this? You know, he's 800 years later. Wow. He seemed pretty cool. I thought Gray, with his attitude when he came on a bit cocky, I thought he's going to hijack Culber's body. Did you think that? I did.
I don't know if I thought that was going to happen, but I did think he was definitely cocky, so you didn't know what to really expect. And as we see in the episode, he basically was kind of testing them, you know, through this whole thing. So that made sense, and I wasn't expecting that, so that was cool, you know.
Yeah.
He did do a really good job. I think actors like that, they relish that kind of stuff. Oh, if somebody comes up and say, you get to play something completely different than your character, it's like, yeah, let me add it.
Okay, think of Spock, though. Think of the odd time where he went a bit batshit crazy and he was allowed to flex his acting muscle, and he enjoyed it. You could tell because he was always deadpan, and it must have been not dull for him, but challenging and limiting, and he gets to flex the muscle a little bit. And Culber did as well. And the same with the musical and Star Trek. What's it called?
Strange New Worlds.
That's on. Thank you. We hated that episode, but the actors loved it, because usually if you're an actor, you're an overall performer, and you can usually sing as well. They loved that, but we didn't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I don't blame them. If I was an actor, I'd love it too. But from a standpoint of the program itself, it doesn't make any sense, and it was crap.
I know.
It's not that TOS didn't do some interesting things with not singing, but similar-ish in a way, but they were able to pull it off better. This one just came across as like a total Broadway musical from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just...
K-pop,
if you're going to do that, then just create this... I mean, watch. Now you'll see this actually go to Broadway for real.
No, don't say that. Do not say that. Take that back. Oh, God. Oh, God. Can you imagine? That would be horrendous. That would be horrendous, mate. But anywho, so he's got the memories, and he doesn't hijack the body, which is good, but I thought he was, just because of the way it was going for me. He's just grateful to have a bit of life, Janelle, and get to live a little bit longer. And the little throwaway comment is they're walking out because they have to find where this path is, this clue. And he says, this guy works out, I like it. And he does. The actor is built like a brick shit house. He looks after himself. They can't beam directly there for a couple of reasons. First of all, Janelle wants a walk. It's been a while since he stretched his legs. Fair enough. And I think it was set up in such a way that they couldn't just beam there directly anyway, because of where the clue was. And you find out later on that the beaming wasn't actually possible exactly where this clue was. So he did want to walk there on purpose. And you find out why later on as well. There's monsters in the background that you don't see until later on. And he basically just wants to make sure the people that he's helping get the clue are the right people, without spoiling the rest of the review episode. So I like this character, Janelle. I loved him. Culber must have loved playing it. The actor must have enjoyed playing another character as well. But you frame... Well, actually, I'm jumping the gun here. I apologize. You could say this episode maybe had four little mini stories to it, or two main ones and two smaller ones. One of the ones was between Saru and Tarina.
His
wife-to-be. So it's Ambassador Saru, and it is President Tarina of Navarre. And they're back at Starfleet HQ, and they're answering questions from Federation heads of worlds, like, I want this and I want that, and give me this and give me that. And you could see Saru, his head starting to become painful, popping some Federation painkillers. Poor guy looked a little bit burst, to be honest with you. And they basically do a voting system of trying to be the fairest they can with their limited resources, helping the people that need it. And they have a little vote, and all is good. But we will see later on in the episode a bit of a lover spat between these two, which was interesting. And I also thought it was a bit dull. I thought it was dull, Gray. Sorry to be negative, but I just...
That was the other way around. Every time I see Doug Jones on screen, he's just always good.
No, it's not his fault. I'm not blaming him. It's the situation, the stories they're giving him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think it was good to follow 3 and 4 stories at a time. It's you keep it too to much. 2 maybe, and that's good.
Yeah.
You know, so that part, yeah, I understand. But when he's in a scene, he just chews it up because he's just so believable.
Yeah, he's the good.
And that's what I liked about him.
He's the good part of this. He himself never does any wrong. I like the actress that plays Tarina as well. I need to check.
Oh yeah, no, bit. She's real good.
She plays.
It's like we had mentioned whatever other week we is that it seems almost as if the characters that they bring in are better than the actual cast. I mean, some of these people are good. We like Rainer. We like the ambassador. Excuse me, the president from Nevada. I mean, all these people are coming in. We're going, oh, he's pretty cool. He's pretty cool. He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, so that part at least helps.
They hire good actors. It's just sometimes the stories are not up to snuff. I think that's
right. The
main thing, to be honest. But yeah, no, Doug Jones is brilliant. No qualms with him at all. Big fan, to be fair. And I think he's probably going to be underused in this season. He should have stuck in Discovery, man. You bring back Tilly, but you don't bring back Saru, really. Yeah.
Well, they want to bring back Tilly, unfortunately, because they want to bring back the whole cast so they can all say bye-bye at the end of the
season. Yeah, they will do something like that.
Season.
They had to come back and reshoot some scenes so they could have a proper series ender because they didn't know that, which was good. That's the decent thing to do. And apparently the end of this is supposed to be amazing. The whole season, the way they go out with a bang in a really good way. Good. I hope so. I really hope so. A little throwaway comment, Grace. Sometimes I pick up random things like this. Apparently, according to Starfleet, the Breen are becoming a problem. Uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened last time this was an issue? It didn't end well. They wrecked my baby. They wrecked the Defiant with their bloody their shield-draining technology and ruined it. It went kablooey. Then they had to get the Sal Palo in and rename it Defiant. Don't like the Breen.
So now we know the Breen is still a pain in the butt 1,000 years later.
They clearly don't have anti-global warming. Remember, they had ice planets. They were all cold and they had suits on. So I like to... Oh, listen, I say that throwaway comment. I like the Breen. They were a fascinating race, to be honest with you. And it would be cool if we saw them again here, but I don't think we will. Now, the cool thing here was... I touched on this a little bit before. Janelle, number 5. Sorry, every time, man, I read that. Janelle and 6 other scientists found out. This is about a background, the progenitor tech back in the day, right? As Culber's walking along, or Janelle is walking along with Booker and Burnham, he is talking about what happened in the past. They came across this bit of technology back in the day, and it killed one of their crew. And he said it was horrific. He quotes as saying, it was horrific, the death of this, my colleague. And when he saw what it could do, again, not giving away too much because it's only the 3rd episode, he was horrified and they agreed to this weapon, this device. They decided to hide it away so no one could find it, remove any trace of it from every database that existed, Gray, and talk about it no more until just now. To see if these Burnham and Booker are the right people for the job. So I found that interesting. But I started to bring it down a little bit. Gray, we'll be talking a little bit about Billy, Tilly. Silly Billy, Tilly.
Billy, Tilly, yeah.
She comes back into it, but Rainer is still my new favourite character so far. And as we know, he's not a people person. He has basically agreed to talk to every crew member, or at least the main crew members. But every time they walk in to the ready room, they have only 20 words to talk about themselves. And I was like, what? You imagine you walk in, you've not even had any time to prepare. 20 words or less to talk about yourself. I mean, I felt sorry for those. Every crew member.
Well, the thing that I thought was interesting is Rainer goes, say 20 words about something that's not in your record. So it'd be something that he doesn't know, supposedly. And of course, it was actually kind of humorous because it went from one end of the spectrum to the other. Some people were revealing goofy things that were funny, and others were interesting.
If he'd done that, but then followed up with an actual proper conversation with them, I would have found that funny because it's an icebreaker. But the problem was he broke the ice and then he teleported away, kind of thing. He just disappeared. That was just horrible. But it was funny at the same time, to be fair. And then this is the bit I just thought was one of these subplots that was so boring between Grey and Adira. Uncomfortable chats about the two of them splitting up. They have a bit of time to catch up. Well, the guys are away finding the next clue with Indiana Jones, a.k.a. Janelle. And they're talking about splitting up. I haven't seen you in a while, and you haven't seen me in a while. And are you thinking what I'm thinking? Yeah, I'm thinking what you're thinking. We should split up now, shouldn't we?
Yeah. But, I mean, okay. It's just really scintillating talk.
Boring and awkward. And I was like, why?
This is the teen angst stuff that they should be putting on a CW show.
You know, they could have done great. This is how you fix it. Our way of writing lines and fixing things. They wanted this actor in that played not great, Adira again, right? Which is fine.
Yeah.
But you could have had one or two lines where Gray gets a Star Trek email through saying, listen, I think we should split up, and he's very sad and down in the dumps. And then Space Dad Stamets has to step up and comfort him along with Jet Reno and stuff. And you don't have to bring that other actor back, and you don't have to have a little awkward silences and pauses and act. Not for me, mate.
Well, like you said before, they're trying to follow like four different storylines. And too many. Maybe that would have been okay if it was some other episode and it was only two storylines and you did something better with it. But this was just like a rush job. Oh, okay, four. Let's go through this part.
That was four, mate. I can get it. You have two stories, an A and a B. Sometimes if it's good and it works, you can have a little small side C plot, if you like. But this was four stories, four plots going on at the same time, which is no good. So, yeah, that I didn't like that part, to be fair. Nothing to do with the actors. The actors are absolutely fine. It was just not necessary. I much prefer Gray when Gray's working with his Space Dad and Stamets, and those two work together really well. And Gray works with Tilly really well as well, I thought. That comes up at some points as well. Now, you didn't think getting this clue was going to be that easy. It's not supposed to be, nor did it turn out to be easy. The kind of T-Rex roars that we keep hearing throughout the episode as they're walking along to find this clue do rear their ugly heads at one point. And not only, there's a reason you didn't see them until now, because you literally couldn't. They were cloaking, man. They cloaking beasties. Cloaking bad guys.
Cloaking giant pugs, yeah.
Pugs? Bugs, well, they did a little bit. Yeah. I see that now.
Big giant moth, beetle, bee things, whatever they were.
Well, they never properly decloaked, so you couldn't see them properly.
Yeah, you could see them. I mean, when they did show, you could see the wings and the buggy
did
eye.
Did they properly decloak at one point? Decloak, listen to me.
They never really decloak completely. Yeah,
just a bit, don't they?
I mean, maybe when they were up on the ridge and stuff, you saw a little bit more. But basically, to save money, they didn't have to make it too real, which is okay. True. I mean, I like the creatures. The creatures are really cool. I mean, I just thought the whole scene was totally ridiculous. I mean,
tell us about that, Greg, because this is the most notes you've wrote in one section.
Yeah, I mean, I just could not fall for what was going on. I'm sitting there going, these are two massive sized insects that are totally overpowered. And can cloak on top of two of them now. Okay, and they're the size of a house, you know, maybe bigger. And so these two things are coming out of, and they're shooting these little phasers at them, like, oh, it's going to do a lot.
Why don't you change it into your rifle?
Whatever, but the thing is, the thing that I couldn't understand is, and this has happened before in Trek, so I'm not saying something that's unbelievable. Why didn't they just call the ship and just say, lay down stun fire in this general area? And then they just jump and hide behind a rock, and then the ship fires off a stun and stuns the bugs, and then they stun them long enough so they can go over there and pick up the clue. Nobody thought of this.
Yeah,
it was
true.
Like an obvious
that's
thing
true.
To do.
That's true.
So instead, they're gonna like kill themselves trying to go after these stupid bugs because they wanted Book to talk to them so much. Like, come on. And then on top of that, Book goes, "Oh, I'll just run out, and you could, you know, to draw their fire, and you can run over there and go get the clue." Sure, that's going to be real easy. But, so you see Book running, two bugs now, who are awful shots that are just throwing stuff out there that's blowing things up everywhere. And of course, he doesn't get hit and just runs completely through both of them. I'm like,
why are the bugs being as aggressive as they are? Like, you need to
right. Well, we find out later that they laid some eggs, and this was their family they were defending, and that's fine. But fair. That still doesn't take away from the fact that it was stupid and it was ridiculous, and it just, man, I don't know. And I mean, I'm gonna put on that thing so fast. Look, we're gonna die. We need you to lay down stun fire immediately in this general area, and just
so
boom.
Wait a minute. You wanted Discovery to lay down planetary fire?
They've done it before in TOS. They did a thing in what was it?
It vaporized them.
No. They purposely backed the phasers off to really weak, just enough to stun. And in the TOS, they actually stunned a whole bunch of people.
If you put a starship's phasers down to minimal and shoot down, you're still going to kill those creatures. I think they're too powerful.
Okay, but then the choice is either they stun them because they're pretty powerful creatures, or you do kill them. Yeah, I was only saying stun because I figure, you may not have to kill them.
I'm glad they didn't do that, because that would have ruined the rest of the episode for what actually happens. It goes in a good angle. There's a reason why things play out the way they do, to be fair. No, they are, for one, they put themselves into a little corner, little cavern section, Booker and Burnham, because they're being aggressive, these bugs. As Gray calls them, and I quote, jank cloaking OP bugs. That's a Gray, it's a Grayism for you. So yeah, they basically are in a little cavern section. They can't beam out because of the minerals, the rocks and stuff. It's always the age old thing with Star Trek. They still haven't got around that. Even in the 32nd century, they still can't get around that.
Can't lock under their pattern, Captain.
And also as well, when Discovery, it doesn't happen as much now, but when Discovery has sparks and stuff going, there's not as many rocks falling out of the panels and the ceiling as there used to be in earlier Star Trek series. Still as recent as the Voyager Deep Space Nine era, there were still rocks that came out of things. But yeah, so they're stuck in there, they can't beam out. And while they were kind of like diving in there for cover, Book gets hit in the leg by one of their barbs. And this thing's bloody huge, this barbed wire. It literally, Burnham pulls it out. They're supposed to count to three, and she's going to use the dermal regenerator on it quick. And she goes, one, two, you can just see him go, well, what happened to three? Apparently, it's not as painful if I do it early. I don't know if I believe that one.
He sure seemed to be handling a giant thing right through his leg. Pretty.
How cool is that? Like, how this right? So they have a phase, when they have a phase in their hand, they have a little circle around them, this little thing that indicates they've got a phaser, right? And then it can morph into a pulse rifle as well if they want. Is that the same thing that then turns into the dermal regenerator? And where is this coming from? Is this coming from this up here, their comm badge?
It's the programmable matter thing.
Is it coming from the badge, though? Or is it coming from something the way around the wrists?
Well,
I don't know.
1,000 years in the future, it could come from anywhere.
That's it.
I would think the badge or something's built into the uniform.
But it's cool. It's cool that they have a dermal regenerator on hand. They should have a whole med kit that's possible to come from this thing, which basically will seal his leg up quickly. So we're okay. But they can't get out. So their decision now is to... Book is going to go running about playing the decoy while Burnham tries to get the clue. Right? But the problem is, when they get out of the cave... She's trying to find a clue, and the OP bugs are still laying down fire. One of them is about to hit Burnham, but then Book does the whole lovers thing, jumps in and saves the day.
I'll talk to them.
He does he does the whole talking thing. Yeah. He's tried it a few times.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with it.
He tried the whole, because he can talk to animals. He's Dr. Doolittle, as I like to call him. Or Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, one of the two.
Book Doolittle.
Book Doolittle, yeah. That should be the title of this episode. He tries to speak to them a couple of times before, but he keeps getting... They hear him, but the bugs keep blocking him. They're not interested. But then when both of them come out at the same time, with their hands, like it was Burnham that does it first. She comes out with her hands, like to show the age old thing, like I'm not holding a weapon. Because I think the phasers before, when they shot the phasers, right, spooked him a little bit. That seemed to work because Book comes out as well and shows that he has nothing. And then that's when Burnham says, speak to them, try one more time. And he does, and the whole forehead lighting up thing. And he talks to them and he explains that, listen, we're sorry, we didn't know that was your young. Please let us leave. We're going to go now. And the bugs do let them leave because they're not, they can't get this clue. They just want to, it's too close to the eggs. They have to just call it a day and move on. But we saw, really? Oh, you go, Griff.
There's one thing that I really did miss, man, that I would love to have heard. I wanted to hear the bug's voice, like, you can leave now. Or something.
It's telepathic, man.
Come on, they did it in the old days, you know, like, you can go now, you know, or something really interesting, buggy-like. But anyway, that's okay.
Bug talk.
Bug talk,
did
right.
You notice one of the shots from, I don't know if it was the teaser trailer from the last episode, that showed Burnham with the same kind of display in her head as Book does when he speaks to animals? Have you seen this picture?
Oh. No,
I've seen
no.
this. She Burnham has a picture online where she has all the kind of ridges lit up and stuff, and I thought something was going to happen to her. Nothing happened to her, though. She seemed to be absolutely fine. But it was Book doing the talking. They're allowed to leave, which is good. And no bugs were harmed in the process, which is good. Now, this was, I'll certainly want your opinion at the end of this little part, Gray, because I mixed mm-hmm. emotions here. Stamets meets Rayner properly for the first time. Now, Stamets comes in basically saying, you know, the whole thing, like he's got 20 words to say what he has to say, but because he's got some mission critical intel, the 20 word limit has been relaxed. He could say what he wants. So he gives some intel about the progenitor device, right, that he's found out. Now, from what we know, again, they're leaking clues about this slowly without giving us too much. The progenitor device, whatever it is, basically, to me, seems to be a Genesis device on crack, is the way I've labelled it here. He reads things like it could bring back people from the dead, it could create life from scratch, it could pretty much do anything. Now, I thought this was very OP. I'm glad they stopped there and didn't discuss it anymore. Don't give us everything at once. But because he was so excited, Rayner thanked him for the information and then basically was done with him. And that's then where Tilly goes nuts and literally rips him a new one, mate. Literally, she's like, listen, I would ask for permission to speak freely, but I know you won't give me it. And she basically just rips him a new. I love this. I'm not a fan of Tilly. You're not a fan of Tilly. But at this moment, she shined. She stuck up for her crew. And she said, oh, I've only got 20 words to discuss what you're like and blah, blah. You're only on this ship so long and stop being a big giant. Oh, I've run out of words. You could just fill in the blanks there. You thought that whole section there is certainly with the device, like you said, progenitor is God. I don't know if that's... We don't know until the end of the season. I don't think that's necessarily true, Gray. I think it's going to be that it's all based in science. Again, creating life and all that, and it all come down to science. Deep, deep, futuristic science. But are you not convinced?
I'm not. The only thing I thought maybe I was a little against was when he was talking about bringing back the dead. That kind of like, I mean, the thing with the Genesis device is that Spock wasn't completely dead yet. And so the Genesis device had something to work on to bring Spock back. Even if it was a bit of a stretch, it made sense. He was flat out saying, you're dead, you're coming back to life. No, I don't think so.
That's impossible with the consciousness. You'll be a zombie.
Right, exactly. So I'm sitting there going like, you know, this is too much now, man. I mean, you're 1,000 years in the future. You can get away with anything. Crutch. Now you're saying that this is the progenitor is God or God-like. Crutch. I mean, it's just too much, man.
It is. If it comes down to how they explain it and explain it well later on, how it's actually limited, or you know, they explain the science behind it, I'll kind of accept it and buy it. But again, they maybe not doing themselves any favours by giving us too many OP clues so early into the season, Gray. So, are you still hating Tilly after she sticks up for her crew? Does she still suck for you?
The scene was okay, but what drives me crazy is that she's been a totally mishandled character since day one. Yeah. And what drives me crazy is one minute she's a goofball, the next minute she's Einstein, and the next minute she's the ship psychologist. I mean, what else can this girl do? She just does everything. And she's been captain before.
She's a multi-tool.
Totally ridiculous. In the mirror world or whatever it was. And I was like, no. So I'm sitting there going, like, she's done all these, like, things that no one could do all at the same time in one person. I'm like, come on, man. Tilly to the rescue. Tilly is this. Tilly is that. Tilly. Well, give me a break.
Silly Tilly. I'm still not a massive fan of the character. I just like how... I like that scene when she was sticking up for... Basically, she left Rayner thinking. Rayner didn't say anything. Rayner didn't shut her down. How dare you speak to me like that? He was just taken aback and food for thought. He actually was soaking in all the information because she literally did rip him a new arsehole, to be fair, which was amusing. Now, we find out when Burnham and Book beam away, Gray, they meet up with Janelle again, and he's chilling at the side of the road or the rock, and he's just chilling up there, relaxing, taking in the rays. And they don't seem best pleased to see him because he bailed basically early into the bug attack.
But he ran away like, oh no, go on.
But he's done it for a good reason, Gray. I love this part. I was a fan of why he done it. So he took them there on purpose. Burnham figured that out because of how he was lying chilling. He took them there as a ruse on purpose because he wanted to make sure that he gave the next part of the clue to people who were worthy due to the power this device has, which is fair enough. He wanted to make sure that the first thing they didn't do was revert to violence, which they didn't. It was a warning shot from Book at the start when he shot in the air, but they didn't actually shoot the bugs. And they actually went in and showed mercy. And he said, this is what I want. I can't give something so powerful to people that are not worthy of it. I thought that bit was a good bit of writing there, Gray. I thought it was pretty smart.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. I think the whole thing was good. It was believable. I think that the actor pulled it off really well. And it made a lot of sense. And there was also a scene where I think they asked him the consciousness that was inside. They said, well, would you have let us just die there and be killed if it had gone the other way? And he said, in order to protect it, yeah. So that was good. He was being honest. Yeah, I would have let you die for sure.
That's cool.
It's that important.
Yep.
Yeah.
Respect the part of the clue that he was talking about. The thing is, right, so where the bugs were and their young, the eggs were, there was a little like symbol in the rock face, right? Yeah. Which looked like it could be a clue. It was cool. It was a ruse, though. It was the whole thing was a ruse. Where he was chilling on the rock, sunbathing, he literally just goes down there and digs about some rocks, and he pulls out this piece. There you go. There's your second part. I was there the whole time.
I was going like, really? You hit that thing right there the whole time? I guess sometimes when they say you hide things kind of in plain sight, yeah, you never think about it.
They very well could have walked past that on their way there. I wouldn't have been surprised, to be honest with you. So... that was really cool, that bit. That's what stopped the episode being a massive flop for me. I mean, there is some moments of good scenes and good writing, and that was one of them. Now, one of the little side plots that I wasn't a massive fan of, we talked a bit of a lover spat between them, as Gray actually calls it, a bit of a conflict between Saru and Serena, because they're about to announce their engagement to everyone, but Tarina's aide basically comes to Saru to say, listen, don't, because if it comes out that you guys are in a relationship about to get married while all this political stuff's going on, it could basically undermine Tarina and cause problems for her political career. And that's when I'm about to say Doug Jones, because Saru basically says to Tarina, should we delay this a little bit? And then she literally comes right back and goes, was he speaking to you? And he's like, yeah. He's like, I don't want to ruin things for you. And she's, what I thought was sweet, cheese, like, listen, I'm taking everything on board. Listen to what everyone's told me. I am still going to announce our engagement because our engagement to be married because I love you and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, yeah, okay, that's sweet. That's kind of cool. Doug Jones hit it out the park again, though. Great, of course, because he's literally plays the best aliens that exist of all time.
I also think the actress that played
Tarina.
Tarina was really good, too, because she, you could tell she was getting upset about stuff, but she didn't really show tons of emotion, but she was able to actually, just through her words and maybe her eyes, you could tell that she was upset about it. So, and that's hard to do, so I give her credit too. She did a pretty good job.
That's an interesting point, Gray, because trying to play a Vulcan, I know she's from Navarre, I think I'll always call her Vulcan to be fair, playing a Vulcan, yeah, cool, is, well, actually she is Vulcan, she's just part of Navarre, which is a makeup of two races now.
Right.
Playing a Vulcan must have been extremely challenging, and it is when you hear some of Leonard Nimoy's documentaries and interviews back in the day. Very, very difficult to try and be deadpan all the time. Gray hits the nail on the head. She's able to convey emotion without conveying emotion, if that makes sense. Some of the things, the way she says things, and also as well, she's not like lovey-dovey. She does her own. She does little things where at one point she boops him in the nose or the forehead or something, without breaking a smile. And I thought, you know, little touches like that are adorable. She brought him a flower, a plant at the start of the episode. Because he loves plants, doesn't he? So I thought that was sweet. So, yeah, this was... The Grey and Adira thing was the most boring part of it. But this was...
Right, that was less believable.
Yeah. This is a bit better.
Right. And I think that's a credit to the two actors, I think.
Yeah,
I don't think the two actors that played the younger couple could pull it off.
No.
But the older actors definitely did. No doubt.
We'd like to. I hope we see a bit more of Saroon, and he's actually able to do a little bit more than what we're seeing so far, because that would be such a waste if he doesn't do more. Hopefully he does.
Spinoff show. Saroon and what's her name again? Sorry.
Tarina. They should literally make it about scrap Starfleet Academy and call it Starfleet. Just call it Starfleet. Bingo. Hit the nail on the head. Just call it Star Trek. Star Trek Starfleet or something like that. And it's literally about Federation HQ or Starfleet the Federation. There you go. I've just come up with another one. You're welcome.
Amazing. I just cannot understand how we're able to do this.
These ideas are free. Like, you can use them, writers. It's fine. We won't take any commission. It is sweet to see this relationship between the two. Just don't make it too... Thankfully, she's Vulcan and it won't be too... because that would be too much.
Yeah.
Now, approaching kind of the end of the episode, of course, Tilly and Rayner do have a bit of heart-to-heart, kind of, sort of. They're at the bar, and there's not quite an apology from Rayner, but he basically explains why he's been a bit of a dick. It's just the way he had a tight-run ship before. He thinks the job should be separate from close friendships and relationships and stuff, and I get that. But Tilly basically just tries to say that, listen, our crew are everything. We look after each other. We're a family. That's how we work as well as we do. If you want to fit into the ship, you're going to have to basically do that. And then she walks away and joins her pals at the table. And you see Rayner looking over and absorbing information, Gray. And you can see the cogs in his head going round. Do you think he's getting the hint slowly but surely? Do you think he's going to be?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do you think he's going to be smoking the spore drive mushrooms with the rest of the crew by the end of the season?
The whole idea is he's not going to change right away, which is okay, but he's starting to. So if he's supposedly a good number one, or he was a captain even before that, he should know that he should be able to adapt. That's part of the job. So we'll see.
Here's an interesting point for you, Gray. I want your opinion on this. If he does really well as a character, right, throughout this season, at the end when they're all going their separate ways, would it be nice that if he's earned the respect of Admiral Vance again to be then promoted at the end of the season and given his another ship again? That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I could see that happen.
Because then he's a better captain. He's evolved as a person and he deserves the rank again. You can't be captain unless you're empathetic. You can't be. It's just impossible.
Right. Like I said, it's part of the job. If you can't do that,
Who was?
You don't need to be captain. You need to be something else.
Who was the most? Now watch. I'm watching my words here. Who was the most up their own arse as a captain? And for me, it was Picard. Not in a bad way. He was the most staunch and strict and stuff. But even he showed empathy, and he was close to his immediate crew, his bridge crew. But he was the most hardcore of all the other captains, but he's still way more empathetic than Rayner, so we'll see
what
happens.
The only thing that, I mean, I think through the years, Picard's character evolved like everybody should. Because if you remember the first season, I think it was, he was like not real happy with kids, even though it was a family ship.
Yes, that was right.
He wasn't real enamored with kids running around, you know, and stuff.
But we find out why. You know? We find out why, because his own family and stuff in the fire. Remember the movie?
Right, right.
So I get it.
But still, I mean, so he basically, he changed as he went along. He figured it out and his credit, because Stewart's a good actor, he's able to pull off the fact that these are all his friends, and in real life a lot of them are his friends, so it kind of all turned out good.
Turned out for the best, actually. Yeah, very closing part of this episode, we see everyone saying goodbye to one another on Trill, and they're all going beaming back one by one, and Gray's about to beam back to Discovery, but they're all kind of got like, they look like monks. Let's not beat around the bush. The Trill look like bloody monks, and I don't recall them ever looking like monks before, but they look like monks.
Yeah.
And they've all got the big robes on and their big hoods covering most of their faces. And this person has got the hood over more than usual and walks up to say goodbye to Gray as everyone else is saying goodbye, like shakes the hand, like the, not that handshake, the one where you kind of like do that, Gray, that's kind of
formal arm handshake kind of thing.
It's like I can't give you a cuddle, a hug, it's a bit too personal, but I'll give you a proper arm shake. So puts the hand on Gray and then takes it away quickly, and then you see a little device appear for a moment and then disappear. It's a tracker, obviously, and you see a little bit more of the person that laid the tracker. It's Maul. She's back. She's infiltrated them. Gray's not happy with this infiltration, though, are you?
Yeah. No, I think, again, I think it was sloppy writing because it's way too easy. So, in other words, the Trill world, which is a pretty massive world, and they even bragged about their security measures earlier in the episode.
Yeah, they offered help, didn't they, Gray? They said, people are coming for this clue. Do you want us to keep some help here for you? And they said, no, we can look after ourselves. Oh, but you allow yourself to be infiltrated.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that wasn't a good idea, but they didn't explain anything. She's just there, and she places the tracker, end of story. I mean, why would we have to have an explanation? Sure, she just appears, of course, and just goes through all the defenses like butter, and just ends up there and just attacks her, and that's the end of that. Come on. I mean, sloppy writing. Give us some dialogue. Give us some backstory. How did she do it? And then I'll try to believe it. But this was just totally unbelievable. I'm going like, where did she come from? Where's the explanation? I mean, it just was. It drives me nuts when they do stuff like that. They just figure, oh, don't worry, just put it in there, and then the audience will just buy it because they're stupid.
So you're calling it lazy writing, then, yeah?
Very much so.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to argue too much against that. That's two pieces of the pie found so far. Was there five in total? Six? Five? I think it was five. Five or six, anyway. So we've got a few more left to go of the clue. But yeah, Gray, what did you give this out of 10 and why, please?
I was tempted to go 6.5. The only reason I did 7... to be honest, was because there were a couple of moments in the episode where the writing was actually strong. Also, there was good, good acting when it comes to Doug Jones and some of the other supporting characters, etc., that they introduced. So some of that was strong. So I decided, all right, I'm going to give him the half point for that. So I'll say 7 out of 10. But there was still, as you heard from our review, some definite problems. And stuff, which has been plaguing Star Trek Discovery since day one anyway. I still hold out until I see the end of the season that their best season was season 3. I like more shows in season 3 so far than any of the years.
Well, it's 3 or 4 for me, one of them, yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason I don't say two, because everybody's going to go, yeah, but two had the Enterprise. But yeah, but that was kind of a...
The Enterprise wasn't... You hardly seen any of the Enterprise, and it was only there as a background character to save season two.
Right. Exactly. And if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, Anson Mount was there playing Pike, it probably would have went down the tubes. So I don't really count that because it was almost like Anson Mount to the rescue. And if you're talking about Star Trek Discovery trying to hold its own, then the third season was definitely better than any other season so far.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Certainly, I did give it a 6.5 out of 10, to be honest here. Was tempted to give it a 6. And yeah, summing it up, it's kind of what we touched on before. There was too many side plots. The one with Gray and Adira just bored me. I was just bored. I get they have to... Well, no, I don't mind telling you. You don't want to hate her. I'm not a massive fan of her, but like Mary Wiseman, she's a good actress, but I mean, it's just the character she has to play.
She'd be good at comedy.
She probably would be. So yeah, there was too many side plots here. The one with Saru and Tarina Eden bores me a little bit because Saru should be doing more. The characters should be a lot more involved for last season because we both love Doug Jones. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm annoyed by that. And the episode wasn't just... It just was very meh. So it wasn't... I'm not saying it's bad. That's when you start getting to 6 out of 10 and lower, you start getting bad. So it was close to it. But yeah, that kind of wraps us up. Of course, please don't forget that we've changed things up a little bit. We tend to do a quick little 10-minute review the day the episodes go live, and then the day after, Gray and I will jump in for this live review because some people like a longer discussion. For the people that listen to the audio podcast, hopefully that makes sense. The live reviews will only be on YouTube. I don't want to repeat myself twice, and having an hour-long podcast to listen to rather than 10 minutes probably makes more sense, I thought, Gray. So if you want the 15-minute or 10-minute reviews, then please just pop over to the YouTubes. And Gray here, if we don't keep cancelling, we'll be back for GGR, I promise. We probably cancelled more times than we've actually had episodes out there, but, you know, life gets in the way. And we talk about entertainment stuff, so we're watching a lot of Fallout at the moment, that TV show, and we'll be talking about that and other stuff probably in the next week or two. And Gray can be found at Gray's Green Room on everywhere, audio, YouTube, Twitters, you name it, he's there. Probably TikTok soon as well. And don't forget, last but not least, we do a gaming podcast on Twitch with our friend and colleague, Nick. And the reason I say look in the description, all the information's in there. The Discord link is in there, and that's key. That has the Trekway room in it. That has Gray's Green Room in it. That has all the gaming stuff in there. If you go to the Discord, you can't go wrong. And if you pop in to the Discord, say hi. Just say I watch the YouTube or whatever. Something old. I'd be curious. But yeah, thank you for your patience, Gray. Thank you for everyone. We'll see you again soon. And until the next time, Gray, do your thing.
Live long and prosper, everybody.
Bye. Bye.